Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, this is Trey. Thank you for joining us for a Thursday edition of our podcast, which, of course, is the day that we have the pleasure of entertaining your questions and doing our best to answer them in a constructive, pithy, hopefully accurate way. I will not make the mistake I made last week, which is to bring my wife into this podcast. I don't think she was crazy about my comments. Actually, as a matter of fact, I know she wasn't, because as soon as she listened to the podcast, I heard from her. And then I haven't heard much from her since. So I will do better. I'm going to leave her out of it this week, and we'll just go to the extent I can, and then we'll just go straight with whatever questions people have been kind enough to send to us.
That sounds like a great plan, Trey. It's great to be here, and thank you all for sending us your thoughtful questions again this week. We'll leave Terry out of this one, but we'll start with a question from Tony.
Well, before we leave her out of it, she went to the Masters and had a great time. You went to the Masters. You hopefully had a good time, too.
Of course I did. And Terry told me about her time, and it sounded like it was just a beautiful weekend for all of us.
It was. It's a unique and special place. And other than Thursday, you know, early Thursday, the weather was idyllic, if we can use that word. I think we can.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that was good. First major is behind us. Scottie Scheffler won, and golf is here. Major season is here.
It is, and it's exciting, and I love the chance to be able to go to the Masters and just experience it. There's really nothing like it. I've heard people say that before, but I actually really believe them now.
It is an incredibly special place, and I think, you know, it's a gift to be able to go, and I'm grateful that my father wrote all for tickets when he was a kid and got on the waiting list, so been able to walk the ground. So much history, so much beauty, tradition. You know, I mean, I doubt we have a question on the Masters, but and no offense to, you know, other golf tournaments. Got one in South Carolina this week, the Heritage. Got, you know, there's just something different about Augusta National and the Masters and the patrons. And you know, I'm not a fan of what I saw at Waste Management on that par three. I guess it's number 16. I'm just not a fan of that when it comes to golf. But you would never in a million years see that at Augusta National. But be that as it may, that's what's on my mind. Nobody cares what's on my mind. Let's find out what's on other people's minds.
They do care what's on your mind, but we will get started with our questions. And our first one's from Tony in South Carolina, so not far from us, Trey, who writes, from a legal standpoint, are no-knock warrants constitutional?
From a legal standpoint, are no-knock warrants constitutional?
Mm-hmm.
The answer is it depends. And let me first not assume that everyone knows what a no-knock warrant is. So the Fourth Amendment, this should be pretty close to right, says the right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. So that is the Fourth Amendment. So their warrants have to be based on probable cause. that then leads, do you have to have a warrant? Can you have a warrantless arrest, a warrantless search? And I would ask you, I'm not going to put you on the spot, Mary Langston, because obviously I like you and I don't put people on the spot that I like. But if a police officer is watching a felony take place, to whom is he or she supposed to go to get a warrant? Are they supposed to say, hey, hang on a second, I know you're in the process of robbing a bank. Let me run to a magistrate judge and swear out, just like the Fourth Amendment says, supported by oath or affirmation, swear out, particularly describing the person to be seized? Or do we have a common sense exception for exigent circumstances or crimes, felonies being committed in the presence of law enforcement? It would be the latter. It's not, there is no warrant requirement if a cop is literally watching a felony take place. Let's assume that you are searching a house pursuant to a valid search warrant. And that search warrant says you can look for evidence of, I don't know, let's say gambling. What happens if you're there and you see marijuana? You have to act like you didn't see it? Or can you rely on what's called the plain view doctrine? So the Fourth Amendment is always the starting point, but it's not always the ending point. Tony wants to know, from a legal standpoint, are no-knock warrants constitutional? What a no-knock warrant is a search warrant. So you have been to a judge, a magistrate, maybe even a district court judge, and you have sworn out a warrant, which is you aver or you swear or you affirm that the facts are true and they have to rise to the level of probable cause to search a place. So let's come up with a fact pattern. Let's assume that it's a crime to have more than six wedges. Let's just assume that's a crime. And the police have probable cause to believe that my son has accumulated quite a few wedges at our house. So they go and they swear out a warrant to search to see whether or not we're violating the law, because he's got closer to 600 wedges. So we're good so far. You go, you swear it out. The question is, when they get to the back door, do they have to knock and say, hello, Mrs. Gowdy, we have a search warrant to search to see whether or not your son has too many Vokey wedges? That's what a no-knock warrant is. A no-knock warrant is you just bust through the back door. You don't knock. You don't announce. Where you get in trouble is, let's assume it's me in the middle of the night who already doesn't sleep great because I watch a bunch of scary stuff, and somebody comes busting through the door, not telling me who they are, and I'm not expecting them. It's not that far for me to reach to grab my little friend that sleeps on the floor right beside me. And then you have a horrible situation with gunfire being exchanged between law enforcement and a citizen. Even though there's a warrant, the citizen doesn't know it's the police. So no-knock warrants, are they constitutional? Yes. Are they advisable? Sometimes. And the sometimes is if you think that evidence is going to be destroyed. In other words, if you're searching for contraband like cocaine or methamphetamine or heroin that can be flushed down the toilet, or something can be set on fire or something can be consumed, you don't want to knock and say, hey, this is the police. In 30 seconds, we're going to come in and execute a search warrant, because by that time, the evidence will be gone. So a no-knock warrant, are they constitutional? Yes. It is in everyone's best interest, usually, to knock and announce your presence as a law enforcement officer. It's better for the safety of the officer. It's better for the safety on the people, for the people on the other side of the door. There are circumstances where you would not want to knock and announce. There are those. but they should be few and far between. And, you know, the Supreme Court said that, you know, generally, you must knock and announce your identity. But it was never intended to be or stated as an inflexible rule that requires it in all circumstances. So, Tony, that's a complicated answer, and I didn't mean it to be a complicated answer. Are no-knock warrants constitutional? They are legal. There's nothing in the Constitution that prohibits them. They are necessary if you have a good faith basis that evidence is going to be destroyed, but they should be used a few and far between. They should never be abused. Judges should sign off on them. It should not be left up to officers to have to decide, because it's just too easy to foresee something awful happening. I mean, if somebody were to come knocking through my door with a battering ram and weapons drawn and I didn't know who it was, I wouldn't react well. So it's in everyone's best interest to knock and announce. But there are circumstances where you don't want the evidence to be destroyed. So hopefully that answers the question.
So thank you for answering that, Trey. And thank you, Tony, for that question. We'll answer more of your questions when we come back.
Pull up a chair and join me, Rachel Campos Duffy.
And me, former U.S. Congressman Sean Duffy, as we share our perspective on the discussions happening at kitchen tables across America.
Download From the Kitchen Table, The Duffys, at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you download podcasts.
Our next question is from Peggy, who writes, what do you think is going to happen with this Trump trial stuff?
Peggy, I think it's hard for any politician to get a fair trial. I mean, people have let, you know, politics, you know, sort of tend to dominate everything here lately. You know, O.J. Simpson just died. And, you know, to me, and maybe it's just me, but he stands for the proposition that race was more important than double homicide. I mean, I honestly, I don't know anyone who thinks O.J. Simpson really did not commit those two murders. I mean, if you really think he is factually innocent, please let me know. I think what happened is the jury decided that allegations of racism towards the Los Angeles Police Department were more important than double homicide. So if race or allegations of racism are enough to allow a jury to find a guilty person not guilty, then would politics be enough to punish someone regardless of whether that person was guilty or not? I mean, I want to have confidence in prosecutors. And I do in many, many instances, because most of us can't name more than 10 prosecutors in the country. I mean, they're women and men who are working for very little money, doing what we call the Lord's work as prosecutors in DA's offices all across this country. But those offices also have nothing to do with politics. I literally do not recall having a political conversation with a prosecutor at either the U.S. Attorney's office or when I was the district attorney. And I had to run. I had to run for office. I don't know who voted for me, who didn't vote for me. I don't know who had yard signs in their yard and who did not. I know that I kept people who did not vote for me because they worked for my predecessor. But I kept them because I thought they would be good at the job, and they were good at the job. When I was at the U.S. Attorney's office, I couldn't begin to tell you the politics of the cops I worked with or the AUSAs. But it just seems like things are different now, and politics tends to be involved in everything, including the justice system, and whatever it touches, it ruins. I don't think nearly anyone else would be on trial for what Donald Trump is on trial for in New York right now. I mean, Alvin Bragg had this long list of crimes that were not worth his time. I find it stunning that making payments to keep an affair quiet would be the exception to Alvin Bragg's rule that he can't find anything worth prosecuting. I just find that stunning. I mean, there are 1,000 reasons, you know, It's not really a conversation I want to have. But, I mean, people are smart. I mean, there are 1,000 reasons people don't want their extracurricular activities to be known. One is to preserve their marriage. It's got nothing to do with, like, winning the presidency or winning an elected office. Sometimes you just don't want to hurt your children. You don't want to hurt your spouse. You don't want to ruin your reputation. Of all the cases that Alvin Bragg cannot find an interest in prosecuting, disguising what's called hush payments as a business expense, I just find it stunning that that's a really good use of court time in New York. But that's what he decided. And worse yet, I mean, I think he ran on a platform of going after an individual. So shame on anyone who votes for a prosecutor who claims to go after individuals and not crimes. On the classified documents case, the facts there seem pretty similar to me to those of former senator, former vice president, current president Joe Biden. And I'm unfortunately very familiar with Secretary Clinton's, the facts surrounding her server situation at all. So are there distinctions? There are always distinctions. Can you make an argument that there were crimes committed in the aftermath, the process of trying to retrieve those documents? I guess you could make that argument, but it's really tough, I think, you know, particularly for Secretary Clinton to have misled the FBI when she knew the questions ahead of time. I mean, Jim Comey admitted he decided he wasn't going to charge her before she was even interviewed. They had fact witnesses in the interview room when she was interviewed. So the New York case to me is pretty clearly Alvin Bragg and politics. I don't think that, I mean, you got all manner of things happening in New York that don't catch his attention. But paying someone to be quiet about an affair just automatically like jumps up the chart up there near capital homicide for Alvin Bragg. Classified documents, you can always find some level of distinction, but I think there are far more similarities between what Biden, Clinton, and Trump did than there are dissimilarities, if that's a word. January 6th, I very much did not like what happened on January 6th, very much. I said it while I was watching it. I have not changed my mind one bit on what I saw. You have never and will never hear me refer to people who have pled guilty or been convicted as hostages. Was it a crime? It wasn't incitement. Was the fake elector plot a crime? Is that a fraud against the United States? We'll have to see what the evidence is, have to see how that one unfolds. The Georgia case, to me, is like New York. It's a politically motivated prosecution. So, you know, to summarize, the two state court charges, both by so-called progressive prosecutors who are mainly, if not exclusively, anti-GOP. The classified documents case looks a lot like other prominent people who retained classified information and did not return it. You are welcome to try to convince me that President Trump's conduct afterwards was somehow different from Secretary Clinton's conduct afterwards. But, you know, I'm listening, but it hasn't been done yet. And that leaves January 6th. And I would say I need to hear and see more evidence there. That would be my take on what I think is going to happen with what our friend Peggy says is the Trump trial stuff. It's fascinating. Jury selection's fascinating. It takes me back to the good old days and a job I loved. I would not have, you know, I didn't go into prosecution to prosecute people for falsifying business expenses. You know, once you've done homicide, sexual assault, kidnapping, carjacking, child pornography, that other stuff wouldn't interest me.
Well, Thank you so much, Trey, for answering that. Thank you, Peggy, for that question as well. Our last question is from Chris in Missouri, who writes, what is your overall view of fandom across sports these days? And what about the sportsmanship that is on display by the athletes themselves?
You know, Chris, I think most fans are great. I mean, obviously, fan is short for fanatic, which is not a compliment, but most fans are great. The ones who are not great are in the minority, but they do get a disproportionate amount of airtime. I do not understand yelling things at people that are trying their hardest, doing their best. I really, really do not understand yelling things at teenagers, at young people. I mean, anyone who's been around me for more than 30 seconds knows that I pull very, very hard for University of South Carolina athletics programs. But the notion that I somehow want to win a football game more than Shane Beamer wants to win it, or more than the people who are out there in spring practice right now, or that I want to win a baseball game more than Mark Kingston wants to win it, or that I'm somehow going to be more disappointed if Dawn Staley doesn't win the national championship or the SEC than she is. I mean, they're the ones that put all the time and effort into it. We have the privilege of watching really fantastic athletes do amazing things. Sportsmanship, I think, is still around. I see it. I watch a lot of golf. You certainly see it in golf. Golf, I don't think, is unique, but it is different. You see it in tennis from time to time. You see it in martial arts. You see people show tremendous respect to one another right before they try to literally knock one another out. But they're very respectful to one another before and afterwards. It's less so in some other sports. I continue, Chris, you know, I'm probably in the minority here. That's okay. Doesn't mean I'm wrong. I think ESPN brings out the worst in sometimes, the worst in us. It highlights the worst. There are so many examples of sportsmanship. Last night I was watching a college golf tournament. I think it's the Western Open. Those kids are so polite to one another. There's no arguing. I'll tell you what, we saw something in the Masters. There was a big advantage between Scheffler and Colin Morikawa, who got to watch whom go first. Morikawa was off the green. Scheffler was on the green, but had a long putt. And as you know, in golf, whoever's farther away goes first. So they could have gotten a tape measure out. They could have called a rules official over and marked it. I have played golf with people before who bring a tape measure because it is an advantage to go second. I don't know if you noticed or saw, Mary Langston, you may not have been on that hole Sunday. Did you see what they did? Morikawa flipped a tee. That's what we do on Saturdays at the club. He flipped a tee. This is arguably the most important golf championship in the world. He would have benefited from watching Scheffler's putt, just like Scheffler benefited from watching his chip. And he reaches in his pocket and flips a tee. And the tee points towards him, so then you see him do his thumb towards him saying, it's my turn, I go first. You just don't see that in other sports. I mean, Scheffler waiting on his caddy to walk and sign his scorecard. There was a women's tournament where I think they were in a playoff, maybe for a major. And I can't recall the female golfer's name, but she cringed when her opponent missed the putt. Not made it, missed it. And if you watch golf, they'll always have a camera on the face of somebody who's already finished their round while somebody has a putt to either win or tie them. And almost never do you see them delight when their opponent doesn't do well. So sportsmanship is still alive and well. I just don't think it gets highlighted. What gets highlighted is doing these professional wrestling moves, trash talking, trying to show up your opponent. That's what gets highlighted. And I think it's a shame. Sports is beautiful. It is important to a lot of people, and it can be done the right way. I remember, you know, back in the old days, opponents used to help one another up in football. I mean, now, you know, obviously you see linemen go over and help their own quarterback up. But in the old days, the opposing players would reach their hand down and offer a hand up. Maybe I've just gotten old, but I just think sportsmanship never goes out of style. To watch Federer or Borg or somebody clap when an opponent hits a great shot, to me, is so much better than watching some of the really spoiled brats that used to play tennis and made the news for arguing with umpires. Maybe it's better for ratings. It's just not better for sports. So my view of fandom is most of us are pretty good. I'm not on message boards. I don't go on message boards and comment about things. But for people who do, these are kids. They're trying their hardest. If you think that you wanted Spencer Rattler to complete a pass worse than Spencer Rattler wanted to complete the pass, then you've never met him. So I would like the grown-ups, you know, to maybe sometimes act a little more grown up. And I would really like sportsmanship to be highlighted. I mean, what Colin Morikawa and Scotty Scheffler did is what makes golf different. You know, they just said, you know what, let's do this the old fashioned way. We'll flip a tee. Scotty Scheffler's got no idea whether that tee was pointed towards him or pointed towards Morikawa. He got no idea. But he trusts Colin Morikawa to say, nah, it pointed toward me. I go first. And it was an advantage. Scheffler wound up two putting for a birdie. It was a big moment. So that's my little sermon on sportsmanship.
Well, well said, Trey. And thank you for answering that question as well. And those are all that we have for today.
Well, hopefully Terry will be happy. I got it done in under an hour. So her little walk to Tierra del Fuego, she wasn't happy that I mentioned Bolivia, but maybe she'll be happier this time. All right, keep the questions coming. I love it. It's one of the highlights of my week. And I will see you soon, Mary Langston.
Sounds like a plan, and we'll be back next Thursday. Y'all have a great week.
All righty. Bye-bye. Listen ad-free with a Fox News Podcast Plus subscription on Apple Podcasts. And Amazon Prime members can listen to this show ad-free on the Amazon Music app.
Listen to the all-new Brett Baer podcast featuring Common Ground, in-depth talks with lawmakers from opposite sides of the aisle, along with all your Brett Baer favorites like his all-star panel and much more. Available now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.